This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents From the Boots Up and From the Hat Down. Written by Andy Marquette. Performed by Paige McKinney and Abby Craden. From the Boots Up. Written by Andy Marquette and performed by Paige McKinney. 1. May 1999. My weekend with Tex Hollis began when I pulled into the driveway of the Lazy T-Bar Ranch west of San Antonio. I knew this wouldn't be an ordinary weekend when Tex cast a critical eye over my shorts, t-shirt, and tennis shoes. 2 days later, I was as comfortable in jeans and boots as any of the buckaroos who spent their days in the saddle. Meg laughed and tossed the magazine back onto her dad's huge oak desk. She leaned back in her chair and braced one booted foot on the desk's edge. "Tex Hollis," she said, sarcastic. "Sounds like somebody out of a long-arm book." Stan looked at her over the top of his reading glasses. "And since when did you start reading that?" She rolled her eyes at him. "Davy keeps a stash. He gave me one to read one night, thinking I'd like the plot." She grinned wickedly. "The plot was way better than the sex." His eyes widened, and she laughed. "I told Davy that, and he never loaned me another one. I think I ruined one of his fantasies." She pushed back farther, regarding him mischievously. He cleared his throat. "Fantasy? Please, Dad, you're a guy. You were Davy's age. You know what guys think about." His cheeks reddened, and he started moving papers around on his desk. "If your mom heard that," he said with exaggerated sternness. "She'd lose her religion because I know about sex. It'd burst her bubble." Meg moved her foot and let her chair legs fall to the floor with a thump. And then her mom would haul out her Bible and start talking about chastity. "Well, moms were young women too, and they don't like to think about their daughters running wild with young guys."
"You mean like mom did with you?" she asked innocently.
The phone rang and he shot her a mock disapproving glare that dissolved into a smile before he answered.
"Diamond Rock Ranch, this is Stan Talmadge."
He clicked the mouse on the computer as he talked. Meg reached across the desk for the magazine and flipped idly through it again before studying the cover. A copy of Spirit from Southwest Airlines. A pair of worn cowboy boots with spurs stood on a workbench against a log cabin wall. A nice photo for a stereotype. She glanced up at him. From the conversation he was having, it sounded like the call was another reservation. They still had 2 spaces available for guests this month, and she hoped the spots filled. This sounded like it would drop their space to 1. Good. She studied him then, noting the fine lines that spiderwebbed from the corners of his eyes and the deepening creases around his mouth. His hair, once as dark as a crow's wing, had lightened to gray at his temples, though she often thought about him without the gray, her attempt to prevent him from aging. The magazine cover advertised a story about Montana and how people could get an Old West experience at a couple of dude ranches up there. She'd heard of them, and she wondered how the ranch owners had managed to get covered in Spirit. The Diamond Rock needed more coverage like that. Even more than what they'd get from the reporter who was coming out to bother them next week. She turned the page, and a photo of a couple of men on horseback herding a few cattle caught her eye. One of the men looked like her dad. She glanced at him again as he continued to talk, doing the Diamond Rock spiel to the person on the other end. Ranching was in his blood,
just like it had been in his father's and in his grandfather's before him. No other place on earth would fire his spirit like Wyoming's Medicine Bow Mountains. Meg knew that, and she knew that if he ever left, it would kill him, just as staying was slowly leaching the years from his bones as it got harder and harder to make ends meet, to get enough paying customers for the Dude Ranch experience, even while he tried to work the ranch with fewer staff. He looked at her, eyes the color of a summer thundercloud, like hers, she'd been told, and gave her a thumbs up. She smiled and returned to her magazine, but she wasn't really thinking about the article. She took after her father in demeanor and physical appearance, she knew, and it was a point of contention when her mother had lived there. But it was Stan who had made Irene pert near crazy with his stubborn streak and independent nature. Loyal to a fault, but unreachable in the deep down parts of his heart, he'd driven Irene right back to Kentucky 9 years ago when Meg was 16.
All right, he said. Thanks for calling. We'll see you next week.
He hung up, satisfied.
Full up.
She grinned at him and placed the magazine back on his desk, relieved.
So, when's that reporter coming in?
He leaned back in his chair and stroked his mustache thoughtfully. He looked like an old-style cowboy with it, especially when he wore his hat and duster. She thought he resembled Wyatt Earp.
Hopefully next Friday, still. I got a call from the editor out there this morning, and the writer she wanted broke her leg. So she's trying to rustle someone else up on short notice.
Meg hid her concern. It was already Wednesday. Next Friday was just over a week away.
Will she be able to get somebody else to come instead?
A story in the Los Angeles Times was too important. They needed the publicity.
She's working on it.
He tried to hide his own concern, too, but she read it in his eyes.
Might have to delay the story a little bit if she can't find anybody on short notice.
How long?
He gave a little shrug.
She said maybe a couple extra weeks. Then there's another window of opportunity in July, which won't be too bad.
The Dude Ranching season pretty much ended here by mid-August, as fall started creeping in over the mountains. Stan needed this publicity because it wouldn't only serve for this summer. It would continue for the next season, and the article would be on the internet, so they could use it in more of their promo.
Did she say who the reporter might be?
The one that had been scheduled was originally from Idaho, and Meg had talked to her briefly on the phone. She sounded nice, and she'd grown up in a ranching town, so Meg figured she'd get the Diamond Rock, and she'd be able to really nail that in her story.
Nope.
He shrugged again.
I'm sure she'll find someone who'll do a fine job on the story. It'll work out.
Hope so.
He narrowed his eyes then.
And you'll be damn hospitable. I don't want to have to be telling your mom why the story that gets published in the Los Angeles Times is about somebody's bad experience at the Diamond Rock.
Why would you even think that?
She looked at him, hurt.
I know how you get,
he said more gently.
You don't suffer fools, and unfortunately, you've got some of your mom's temper. But in this case, I need you to suffer.
He smiled at her.
No practical jokes on the greenhorn.
Her mother's voice echoed through her mind.
Damn it, Stan, would you get that girl in hand?
She sighed.
I'm not 16 anymore.
No, but 24 ain't that far off.
25?
Not yet, Missy. Next week. And I can still turn you over my knee, so no bullshit. We need this publicity.
He tried to look forbidding, but a twinkle danced in his eyes and she relaxed. "Well, since I'm such a loose cannon, can I not be in charge of the reporter?" She didn't mind playing babysitter, but if she didn't have to, that was fine with her. She hoped whoever the Times lined up had at least a little outdoor experience.
"The way I see it, whoever they send will be here for a week, and they'll want a full range of ranching experience, and they'll observe and ask questions. They might or might not want a tour guide. And you'll be an official Diamond Rock liaison, so every day I expect you to be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed with the reporter. Just treat whoever it is like a regular registered guest. You're good with that, hon. They really do like you. Don't think of it as being under the microscope or something."
"Great," she said with a sigh. She imagined them all dressed up, like on the set of Bonanza, and she groaned softly.
"I know, it's kind of a pain in the ass, because we do have to mind our manners even more, and you don't know for sure what's gonna end up in print. We've got to make it so this reporter can't resist writing a great story about the DR. In fact, we want this reporter to come back every chance he gets. Or she," he corrected himself.
"I know, don't worry." She reached over to the neighboring chair to retrieve her hat. "You don't think whoever it is will be like the writer of this story," she gestured at the magazine, "and change your name to something like Slim Thompson?" She was only half teasing. He pursed his lips, pretending to think.
"I'm hoping for something like Dutch Walters, and maybe you'll get to be Cherry Goodnight."
Meg grabbed the Spirit magazine off the stack of papers and threw it playfully at him. He caught it and tossed it onto the desk, chuckling.
"You could change your middle name to Cherry before the reporter gets here, so there'd be some veracity there."
She gave him a look and started to get up.
"Your mom called this morning," he said, as he leaned back in his beat-up office chair.
He folded his arms and regarded her with an expression that was a mixture of concerned dad, but acceptance for whatever decision she might make. She settled in her seat again, her Stetson in her lap. She rubbed her fingertips over the black felt, waiting. She got her stubborn streak from him, but hers was more pronounced. He'd told her she could outweigh a rock.
"You need to talk to your mom more," he said after a while. "She misses you."
She didn't answer. Instead, she studied the knotted pine wood on the walls behind his head. He waited a few more moments, then leaned forward and picked up the copy of Spirit. He flipped through it as she had done earlier.
"She's your mom,"
he said without looking up from the pages.
"She's not really thrilled with me right now, as you know."
She watched for his reaction, but his expression didn't change.
"So don't talk about that."
"That's all she wants to talk about. It's not like I make it a point to advertise my personal life."
"Well."
He set the magazine aside and tugged at the hair above his right ear, something he did when he was really uncomfortable. Meg wished she hadn't told him either, wished she'd never said that the painful breakup she'd endured last fall was with a woman. Since then, he'd struggled with it, and some of their interactions were tinged with an unfamiliar stiffness.
"I'll call her," Meg relented.
"That's my girl,"
he said with obvious relief.
"But I drive her crazy, even on the phone."
Her mom always asked whether Meg was seeing any nice young men at school, and Meg would have to deflect those statements or tell her she was still getting over someone. Irene knew it had been a woman because Meg had told her around the same time she'd told her dad. But since Irene had gone back to Kentucky, she'd found the Lord. And this particular Lord didn't much care for gay people, even those in your own family.
"She's still your mom," he said, tugging on his hair. "Find something you're both interested in and keep the conversation there."
"Yeah," she said doubtfully. She stood up and put her hat on. "See you around, Dutchie." She grinned at him and was out the door before he could toss the magazine after her. She decided to put off the dreaded phone call and walked instead across the swath of hard-packed earth between Stan's office and living space and the lodge, which had been the main ranch house before her grandfather had converted it in the 50s to accommodate space for kitchen and dining facilities that could have passed muster in a big city restaurant. Stan had upgraded it 2 years ago. New appliances, better shelving, new pots and pans, new dishes. They'd even added a walk-in cooler. Alice, the chef and kitchen queen, as she called herself, more than approved of the changes. She'd been at the ranch since just before Meg's mom had left, and she thought of her as family now, like a favorite aunt. She went in through the front, and the rich, heavy odor of cowboy chili greeted her, along with voices from the kitchen and the sound of a knife chopping something. She blinked in the dim dining room after being out in the midday sun. Three long tables, decorated with blue and white checkered tablecloths, stood parallel to each other in the center of the big room. Each could seat 15 on the benches, and some summers they did. On rare occasions, they had to add another table. Meg hoped it was that kind of summer. The more paying guests, the happier her dad was. She wiped her hands on her jeans and checked through the stack of mail on the closet table, then went into the kitchen, through the swinging door that separated it from the dining room and entered Alice's domain, which could rival something in one of those high-end cooking magazines. "Hey, Meg," said Anna, Alice's prep cook, as she looked up from the cutting board on the island where she was chopping carrots.
"Hey."
Alice emerged from the walk-in.
"Hi, sweetie,"
she said with a smile that, in conjunction with her swept-up hair, made her look like a glamorous 1940s actress, even when she had her cowboy duds on, as her dad called them. Jane Russell, Meg thought. That's who Alice looked like, though her hair was a lighter color. She was in her late 40s now, but she was just as pretty as when she'd started working at the ranch. Alice always turned guys' heads, but she was so down to earth that she didn't seem to notice.
"Would you like a sandwich? You missed lunch."
She closed the walk-in door. "Is the chili ready?" she asked hopefully.
"Not yet. Let me make you a sandwich."
"Are you sure I can just—" She raised an eyebrow imperiously.
"I am the kitchen queen. I have spoken. Go sit down."
She gestured at the counter by the back door. "Yes, Your Majesty." She walked around the island and hung her hat on one of the pegs by the door, then sat down on one of the stools, her back to the counter so she could watch Alice and Anna.
"We got another reservation." "Oh, good. I know your dad was worried about filling up,"
Alice said as she sliced bread.
"He said that the reporter that was supposed to come broke her leg."
She stopped slicing bread and looked over at her, concern written in the lines across her brow.
"The editor is trying to find another reporter who can come out on short notice."
She went back to her sandwich making.
"Well, that's how journalists operate. They're used to changes in plans."
Alice finished with the bread and started slicing part of a turkey breast.
"How soon can the new one come?"
"They don't know. I guess they're trying to keep the same schedule if they can find someone, but they might not be able to. So maybe the next couple of weeks or July."
"Too bad," From what your dad said, the first one sounded like a good match for an assignment like this.
She spread deli mustard on one slice of bread and mayonnaise on the other, then placed the slices of meat on the mayo piece and lettuce and tomato on the mustard piece. She'd add her secret spices next.
Oh, and I'm not supposed to be an asshole.
Anna snickered, and Alice looked over at her, her lips twitching with a smile. She returned her gaze to Meg.
You're hardly that.
Dad seems to think I am. He kinda makes me feel like I'm a teenager still.
That's his job as a parent, to make you feel like a teenager the rest of your life. And if it's any consolation, you're far from being a teenager. You're your own woman. Just remember that to your dad. You'll always be his little girl.
Then why is he freaking out that I'll be an asshole to the reporter?
He's just stressed, hon. He wants to make a good impression so the story gets a lot of attention.
She went over to one of the refrigerators and took out a jar of dill pickles.
He thinks I have Mom's temper, and he thinks I don't suffer fools. I guess he thinks if the reporter's an idiot, I'll let him or her know.
She laughed.
Nothing wrong with pointing something out, and nothing wrong with a woman having a temper. You just need to learn how to direct it appropriately. And maybe soften the blow.
She retrieved a plate from under the stainless steel counter along the back wall.
Diplomacy, love, she said. The art of telling people they're idiots without making them feel too bad about it.
Anna giggled as she reached for another carrot. Meg grinned.
I guess I might need to work on that a little bit. Don't hurt yourself,
Alice said with a smile. Anna finished with the carrots and put them in a plastic tub that she carried into the walk-in. She had to duck her head since she was pushing 6 feet tall. She'd never played team sports, for which her height probably would have served well. She was, however, an excellent barrel racer.
I'm not going to screw this up, Meg said. It still stung a little that her dad thought she might. No, you're not.
Alice brought the plate over to her. It looked like something out of a food magazine, with the pickle and chips arranged artfully around the sandwich halves. Meg smiled.
Thanks. I love your sandwiches.
She squeezed her shoulder.
Iced tea?
Yes, please. She turned so she faced the counter and bit into the sandwich. Alice made the best.
How is it that your sandwiches always taste so good?
She said after she'd swallowed.
Made with love.
Alice winked as she put a glass of tea and a napkin on the counter next to Meg's plate.
You're the best kept secret in the West. Please don't ever leave us. But if you do, mention the diamond rock on your cooking show.
She laughed and went to clean up.
You're your father's daughter.
Meg continued to eat, Anna and Alice chatting amiably behind her. When she finished, she took the plate into the dishwashing room, then went back into the kitchen where Alice was checking the chili. Anna must have gone into the dining room because one of the swinging doors was moving. Alice handed her a spoon.
One taste, no double dipping.
She laughed and took a spoonful, holding it over her cupped left hand so none would spill. She blew on it and tasted it.
Oh my God, best chili ever.
She finished the spoonful and Alice took the utensil from her.
Make sure you tell the reporter that. I won't have to. One taste will prove it.
Alice set the spoon aside and continued to stir one of the big pots on the stove.
He's still acting weird, Meg said after a few more moments.
She stopped stirring and gave Meg her full attention.
About your breakup with Amanda?
She nodded.
He'll come around.
I think he's hoping that I was just experimenting, and now I'll go find a boyfriend.
He also just wants to make sure you're happy.
She reached up and brushed Meg's hair out of her face, like a mom might.
Sweetie, your dad loves you more than life itself, but he's a little traditional in some ways, and it'll just take him a little bit to get used to the idea.
Parents always have expectations for their children, and he's having to revise some about you.
I feel like I screwed up. Maybe I shouldn't have told him.
A knot tightened in her chest, and she hated this wedge that seemed to have come between her dad and her. Alice pulled her into a hug.
You had to, because this is part of you, and it's not healthy to keep that all bottled up inside. I'm proud of you for telling not only your dad, but your mom.
Meg groaned as Alice released her.
I'm supposed to call her.
She gave her a sympathetic smile.
You are who you are, and you're choosing to live your life on your terms.
She doesn't like my terms.
Well, it's not for her to decide, is it?
She makes it seem that way.
You'll get through.
She pecked her on the cheek.
Come and talk to me later tonight if you want.
Meg nodded. Thanks. Anna came back into the kitchen, and Meg waved at her before she moved to the back door, where she retrieved her hat before she went outside. Across from the dining room and kitchen, about 30 yards away, stood the two-story structure dubbed the Motel, modeled after a North Woods hunting lodge for the guests, its rooms accessible from the outside. Covered verandas sheltered the walkways. Her father lived in quarters just off the office building, also across from the motel, and the hands lived in bunkhouses. All the structures surrounded a large, packed dirt parking area, like wagons circling a campsite. She took the outside steps of the lodge to the second floor where she lived. She alone occupied this level, unless they had extra guests. Otherwise, she kept the extra rooms closed up. Maybe the reporter's story would bring them enough business that they'd be able to open these extra rooms. Her boot heels made hollow sounds on the wood, and the metal roof of the veranda creaked and popped in the sun. She sighed as she opened the heavy wooden door into her foyer, hung her hat on one of the pegs near the entrance, and walked down the hallway toward her bedroom, where she kept a phone. 2.
Looks like we're in luck with a reporter, Stan said as he leaned against the corral's fence next to Meg.
She'd been watching Jackson work with a horse, along with a few of their current guests who weren't within earshot. She smiled with relief because it was already Tuesday.
She's supposed to get in this Friday.
Another woman.
Could be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on whether Davy took a shine to her or not.
He could be kind of charming, but also kind of annoying.
Does someone need to go pick her up at the airport? She asked.
No, she's got her own transportation, apparently.
Who is it?
Don't know, but the editor assured me that she'll get here Friday.
He pushed the brim of his hat back a bit from his forehead.
She'll be here a week, which I guess is a full immersion experience, or whatever they call it these days.
He shrugged. She nodded. A week on ultra super good, keep everything perfect behavior. A week with Stan on high alert.
It'll be fine. You'll see.
He looked at her, surprised.
Alice said so.
He laughed.
Oh, well, then it must be true.
Hey, if anyone would know, it'd be her. He nodded and watched Jackson.
Yep, it would.
He looked back at her.
I need you to make a couple runs to the feed store this week. And on Wednesday, could you go to Laramie and pick up a couple of saddles I dropped off last month for repair?
Sure. Do we need anything else from Laramie? She'd combine one of the feed store trips with the Laramie trip.
Nah, don't want you having to run around the big city too long.
He gave her a grin. Yeah, booming metropolis of Laramie. Scary, trying to find my way around.
Speaking of finding your way around, can you go with Davy this afternoon for a horseback tour? I got 9 people on the schedule.
Yep.
Thanks.
He squeezed her shoulder.
It's not so bad having you around,
he said, droll. Yeah, well, it's not so bad hanging out with you either. She poked him in the arm.
And I'm sorry about what I said the other day. I know you won't screw anything up when the reporter's here. I'm just a little
stressed, I know. He gave her a sly look.
But no snipe hunting with the reporter.
Meg laughed. Damn, I was going to take her out with the kids, see if we could catch one. Maybe she could get a photo of the elusive snipe, along with a jackalope. He chuckled and gave her a quick squeeze around the shoulders.
Davy'll be saddling up in about an hour.
Okay, I'll go help.
Thanks, hon. See you at dinner.
She watched him walk over to chat with some of the guests, then headed for the horse pens and stables to help get set up for the trail ride. She checked the paddock on the way. Davy had already saddled 3 horses, and he was in the stable when she walked in.
Hey, you gonna be my riding partner today?
He asked.
Yep. Cool. I've got Jester, Jim, Tom, Spots, and Dex ready for saddling.
He took his baseball cap off and ran his hand through his close-cropped hair. He was just 21, but he already had the tight, rangy build of a guy who spent a lot of time working outdoors. In 20 years, he'd probably have the classic Marlboro man look to him. He brushed his faded blue tee off and took a drink from a water bottle he'd placed on a nearby hay bale. She draped a bridle and bit over her shoulder, then pulled a saddle off its sawhorse and walked it out to the horses. Dex was closest, so she saddled him first.
Heard we're gonna get a reporter after all,
Davy said from behind her.
Yeah, she is supposed to be here Friday.
She?
Meg rolled her eyes, but Davy didn't see because her back was to him, and she was focused on adjusting Dex's belly strap.
Yeah, she's about 68, wears frumpy dresses, and plays bridge. She's hoping a few of the folks here are into that.
But she's not. But she's a babe. California girl, after all. Bet she's blonde and that she wears tight jeans.
At least he didn't talk about her boobs. Meg turned toward him.
No fraternization, dude, she said with a surfer accent. That's the rule.
There's no rule against looking or talking.
He gave her a toothy grin, edged with a little bit of flirtatiousness, which probably would have worked on a straight girl. Davy had that kind of charm to him.
Is that all you ever think about?
She turned back to Dex and fitted the bit into his mouth.
What? I'm a healthy young guy.
There's more to a woman than tits and ass,
she said as she worked the bridle over Dex's head.
Oh, I know. Believe me, I know.
She shook her head and looped the reins loosely around the saddle horn.
Come on, Meg, he said with his aw shucks tone. You know I'm only teasing, but I do appreciate a woman's assets.
I'll bet. But the reporters are off limits.
No harm in looking.
He flashed her another grin and retreated to the stable for another saddle. She shook her head and patted Dex's neck. It was going to be hard enough being under an outsider's scrutiny for a week,
trying to make light conversation when your every word was up for examination. Unless she was Davy's type, in which case it wouldn't be such a bad thing for him to do a little flirting with her. It would keep her off Meg's back, at least. On the other hand, it might annoy the hell out of her if he wouldn't leave her alone. She'd have to keep an eye on the situation regardless. She gave Dex another pat and went to get another saddle. Highway 230 in southern Wyoming cruised north over the rolling prairie of the North Platte River Valley that spread-eagled between the Medicine Bows to the east and the Rockies to the west. The road jagged through Riverside and became I-30 on its journey north into Saratoga, population about 1,700, and distance about 15 miles from Diamond Rock Ranch. This time, however, Meg approached Saratoga from the north because she'd had to go to Laramie to pick up the saddles Stan had requested. So she'd taken I-25 north-northwest from there to Walcott and turned south onto 130. She hit the outskirts of town 20 miles later and slowed. Saratoga maintained a loose-limbed western feel, as if the original Anglo newcomers had just decided to park their wagons among the tall cottonwoods and Chinese elms, then build houses nearby, keeping a respectable distance from neighbors. Downtown, which encompassed barely a few blocks, was easy to find off Highway 130, a main artery, and once Meg got past the residential areas on the outskirts of town, she hit the area zoned for businesses, too. Several locals gave her the quintessential rural wave, a raised index finger off the steering wheel of a pickup, and she returned the greeting in kind. Tourist vehicles she recognized as well. Those were the sports sedans, usually with out-of-state plates. They came for the fishing and outdoor recreation, including Saratoga's mineral hot springs. The North Platte River flowed through town, and it harbored some of the most active in the state, known among Indians for generations before the city fathers harnessed it in the late 19th century and created an outdoor municipal pool, the Hobo Hot Pool, free of charge, for sitting and soaking. If you wanted to pay a little more, you could indulge in the nearby resort, just off downtown. Meg had enjoyed both over the years, though now that she was in school, she didn't get back enough to do it. Maybe if she got a little time off later this summer, she could. She'd also recommend the springs to the reporter, give everybody a break at the ranch from scrutiny. She pulled Stan's big Ford F-350 off 130 into the dirt parking lot of Saratoga Feed and parked right near the entrance. She got out and stretched, the afternoon sun of mid-May warm on her back through her tee. A couple of older guys leaned against a beat-up blue Chevy truck nearby. One, with features as craggy as a canyon wall, nodded at her in greeting as she walked toward the store's entrance. She gave him an answering nod before she went in. "Hey, Chet," she said to one of the men behind the counter as she approached. He was a living embodiment of a Wyoming landscape, big, raw-boned, windblown. His voice rumbled from his chest like a train. He'd been doing business with her father longer than she'd been alive.
"Meg, good to see you. When did you get in?"
"Couple weeks ago, had to finish up finals." He nodded, approving.
"Your dad says you got straight A's again."
"I did." She gave him a grin. Worked her ass off, but it was worth it.
"Good to hear it. Vet school still in your plans?"
he asked as he pushed the brim of his worn ball cap back on his forehead a bit. The Justin Boots logo on the crown was wearing off. It said Stin Boot. "Yep, I'd like to stay at CSU, but I'll apply to a few others." She handed him the list of items her father had requested. "Unless I decide to be a bull rider, of course." He smiled.
"Taken any classes this summer?"
"Nope, but that's okay, 'cause I'll still graduate in December." And she was already preparing for her classes,
with a reading list she'd put together before the previous semester had ended.
I reckon there'll be a hell of a party this side of the Tetons after your last semester.
He glanced down at Meg's list. Well, you're invited, Meg said.
Much obliged. Where are you parked?
Right out front.
All right, give us a few.
A bow-legged older man plunked two new pairs of leather gloves and two tins of gall salve on the counter. A young man Meg vaguely recognized rang up the items while Chet took care of her list. Two more locals approached the counter with items in hand, and she turned to wander down the aisles. The feed store was as familiar to her as home. She loved how it smelled like the barns on the ranch, a pungent mixture of molasses from omeline and other animal chows, alfalfa, and leather. She studied the shelves of fly and lice control products and listened to random snippets of conversation about the things that mattered here: weather, cattle health, livestock for sale, who was sick, who just had a baby, cycles of life and death, the natural rhythms of lives lived close to the land. She never got tired of it, and she knew that this would always be home, as much a part of her as her bones and blood. Maybe that was another reason that she and her mom didn't see eye to eye. Meg had too much Wyoming in her, too much West, like her dad and his dad and his dad. Her mom had been the newcomer, the outsider, and she couldn't find purchase in the hard-packed ethos of a state that hadn't moved too far past its pioneer beginnings. She grimaced. That and the gay thing.
All right, got you all loaded up, Chet said, clumping toward her.
He handed her the list. She followed him back to the counter, where the young man was helping an attractive blonde woman wearing skin-tight Wranglers and dark blue ropers. Meg let her gaze wander down the other woman's back. Not quite her type, but nice to look at. Definitely Davy's type, though. And he'd let this woman know, too, if he were here. What he lacked in subtlety, he made up for with good humor, at least.
Here's the invoice, Chet said as he tore it off the printer. Good to see you. Come and bother us again.
He winked as he handed her the paper.
And practice that bull riding.
Maybe I'll test it out at Frontier Days, she deadpanned as she folded the invoice and slid it into her back pocket. Chet chuckled.
You do that.
She grinned and left, but held the front door open for an older woman carrying a box. Thank you, honey, she said. Meg nodded at her and headed to the truck. A gray Nissan Pathfinder was parked next to the driver's side, and she noticed that it listed at an odd angle in the back. She watched as the left back end started to rise. Somebody was jacking it up. Flat tire, probably. She went around the vehicle to see if she could help. A woman was concentrating on the motion of the jack as she cranked the handle, one knee in the dirt. Meg approved. She appreciated a woman who didn't mind getting her jeans dirty. Hey, Meg said. The stranger looked up and brushed a lock of dark hair off her forehead. Hi, she replied. Meg stared at her for a moment, transfixed by her dark eyes and the warmth that sparked within. Need some help? She managed.
Not sure there's much you can do. Kind of a one-person job.
She smiled up at her.
True. Okay, how about I get your spare?
She returned the smile, and her palms were suddenly sweaty.
Thanks. In the back, underneath the mat. It's open.
She resumed cranking, and Meg turned to the back of the truck. The back window was indeed open, and the tailgate was down as well.
Okay if I move your stuff here? She asked.
Oh, yeah, came the response. Just toss it onto the seat.
Meg leaned in and hefted the two big duffel bags over the back seat. She flipped the mat back and unfastened the panel that would reveal the spare. She pulled it off and leaned it against the right side of the vehicle, glad that the stranger used a full-sized spare. She appreciated that, too. Practical, especially out here. She hooked her hand into the rim and hauled it out.
"It occurred to me that I did this backward," the stranger said from her position on the ground, an undercurrent of laughter in her tone.
Meg looked at her, still holding the tire, and a little spark bounced around her stomach. She liked her strong features and the little crinkle lines at the corners of her eyes when she smiled. And she liked the way her dark hair fell past her ears and brushed her neck, and she especially liked her eyes, almost black, mysterious but welcoming, an invitation in their depths to give them a long, slow look. She caught herself staring and managed a nervous smile.
"Well, it is easier if you get the tire out before you jack the side up, yeah? No problem, though."
She lowered the spare to the ground and rolled it around the side. Before the Pathfinder's driver could protest, Meg picked up the lug wrench and set to work.
"You didn't get this part backward," she said, laughing a little,
still nervous because she imagined the stranger's warm, dark gaze on her, and it made her heart beat a little faster. Fortunately, she'd already loosened the nuts. With quick motions, she removed them and put them in her shirt pocket, then eased the tire off and leaned it against the side of the Pathfinder. She turned to get the spare, but the stranger was already moving it into place.
"Nice work,"
Meg said as she handed the other woman the nuts out of her pocket. She watched as the stranger tightened them a bit before she lowered the jack. When the vehicle's full weight was on the ground again, the stranger tightened the nuts further.
"Thanks," she said as she stood. "Is there any place I could take that?" She gestured with one hand at the flat. "And get it fixed?"
"Yep, Jim's Auto, and they're open for another 2 hours."
Meg gave her directions, which wasn't hard because everything was relative to Highway 130.
"It's not far. It'll be about $15, and they'll cut you a little deal for cash."
"Great, thanks."
"Sure, ask for Jim or Buck. Tell him Meg sent you."
She chuckled.
"So I take it you're local?"
"For the most part, when I'm not at school."
"Well, it's nice to meet you, Meg. I'm Gina."
She extended her right hand and Meg took it, and her hand was warm and strong in hers, and another spark kicked around her stomach. They were about the same height, which made it that much easier for her to lose a few seconds in Gina's eyes. She reluctantly released Gina's hand and slid her own nervously into the front pockets of her jeans. Her palms seemed to tingle.
"In town for a bit?" she asked.
Gina started to respond when Chet called from the door of the feed store.
"Meg, Mark's on the phone. He needs to check with you about something."
Meg sighed. She'd talked to him before she left Laramie, and he said they didn't need anything else.
"Be right there."
She turned back to Gina.
"Sorry, you got this?"
She pointed at the tire.
"Not a problem, and yes, I can handle it. Thanks again."
A slow smile tugged at the right side of her mouth.
"Maybe I'll see you around."
Something in her voice made Meg's heart rate speed up again and sent more sparks down her spine.
"Yeah, take care."
She gave a little half wave and went back into the store, forcing herself not to look back and seem overly eager or something. She finished with Mark and asked Chet for a few more bags of feed, chafing at what seemed his slow pace. He printed out another invoice, and she took it and almost ran out of the store. The Pathfinder was gone. She stood looking at the spot where it had been parked, disappointed. The faint marks in the dirt where Gina had kneeled were still visible, as well as a few scuffed tracks from both of them. "Damn," she said under her breath. She hadn't even looked at her license plate, so she didn't even know where she was from. She waited for the guys to bring the feed and put it in the back of the truck, and then she got in and headed home. She almost turned and headed over to Jim's, but thought that might make her look like a stalker. And besides, what would she say? Hi, me again. Are you single? Better yet, are you into women? I know this is a little forward, but I... She stopped. What? Really like your eyes? Think there's something about you? Lame. Beyond lame. She grimaced and turned the volume up and sang along with Martina McBride, still thinking about the all-too-brief encounter with a stranger in a parking lot. 3. Meg wheeled Rusty around and started back toward the lodge. Mark said he'd seen a few unbranded calves with Diamond Rock cattle in this vicinity, so she tracked a portion of the herd along the eastern border of the Medicine Bow National Forest. But all those calves had brands. If she had time tomorrow, she'd take Mark and see if they couldn't find the strays and brand them. They'd also need vaccinations. Damn. It'd be half a day to cut them from the herd and bring them down. Easier to just chase after them, maybe. She whistled sharply and looked back over her shoulder. Dammit and Bugoff tore out a stand of pine, racing each other to get to Rusty's side. Dammit was a mixture of border collie and Australian cattle dog. Bugoff was a blue heeler. They were the best trained of the four dogs at Diamond Rock, and Meg took them with her wherever she thought she might have to cut a cow from the herd to check it for something. They didn't have to do much work today, since she was able to get close enough to check the cattle with a visual, but the dogs did keep her amused with their antics. She clicked her tongue softly and gave Rusty's neck a pat. They'd be home in a half hour. She glanced toward the sun, late afternoon. Plenty of time to get Rusty squared away, clean herself up, and be at dinner to meet the reporter and make nice for a good impression. She hoped the reporter wasn't completely annoying. The week was going to be long enough. The next round of guests had started to arrive yesterday. They included a young newlywed couple from Chicago that had brought the groom's parents for some bonding. Another, an older woman from St. Paul, drove in from Denver. She was an artist, she said, and was looking to clear her head. She seemed nice. The dogs raced back and forth across the cow path in front of Rusty, who diligently ignored them with calm, equine patience, his hooves following the familiar track home over the rolling prairie. She inhaled deeply, the smell of pine, sage, and tall grass filling her nostrils. No matter what was going on in her life, she always found peace here. Her thoughts drifted yet again to Gina, as they had on Wednesday when she met her, and all day yesterday, and more today. Maybe she worked for the Forest Service or the BLM, which meant she might be in the area for the summer. She could ask some people. See if anyone knew her. Maybe check in at the Forest Service district office in town. After all, Gina had said that maybe she'd see her around. Why would she say that if she was just passing through? She adjusted her weight in the saddle, trying to think about something else. But she kept seeing Gina's eyes, kept feeling the warmth she sensed there and the sparks her handshake had generated. Wasn't that kind of weird? To keep thinking about someone she'd only met once and briefly? Whatever. Like having a crush was a bad thing. If she saw Gina again, it would add another thrill, and if she never did, then the crush would fade and she'd go back to school in August. No big deal. Just a nice fantasy for the summer. But how could you have a crush on someone you'd barely interacted with? An attraction was one thing. She'd had those to women she'd met in the past. But this was a bit stronger than just an attraction, which was why she figured it was a crush. Or were attractions stronger than crushes? Whichever. Maybe she was just feeling a little bit lonely. After all, she hadn't dated anyone since Amanda. That was about 8 months ago, and here was a good-looking stranger with great eyes and a nice smile who she'd chatted with for a bit. No big deal.
So why couldn't she stop thinking about her? Dammit barked and nipped at Bug Off, and they raced straight down the path, yelping and whining at each other. Meg laughed and nudged Rusty into a trot as they crested the last rise and headed down toward the spread. 90 minutes later, she clunked down the steps of the lodge and entered the kitchen through the back. She had showered and changed into clean jeans and a Colorado State University tee. "Hey, Alice. Hi, Dad. Hey, Anna."
"There's my darling daughter," he said in greeting.
He was leaning against one of the counters, going over menus with Alice.
"Did you find any naked calves up there?"
An image of what Gina might look like in shorts flashed through Meg's mind, and she stifled a giggle.
"Nope. You want me to go up tomorrow? I'll take Mark if you don't have him doing anything."
He straightened.
"I'll see if Mark and Davy can go. I'd like you to stick around. We've got 15 arriving tomorrow, and that'll be the first full day with the reporter. I need a native diamond rocker on hand for questions if I'm not around."
"Diamond rocker, huh? Maybe we should get some new t-shirts made with that on it."
She ran a hand through her still damp hair.
"Not a bad idea,"
he said with a grin.
"We could offer them to people who survive at least a week with us."
Alice laughed.
"A week with Meg's nothing. A week with you, however."
She gave him a look, and he pretended to be offended.
"Are you saying I'm difficult to get along with?"
Alice caught Meg's eye, and they both grinned.
"Yes,"
they said together. Stan gave Meg a mock glare that she responded to with one of her own. They held the stare down for another few seconds before she burst out laughing and he smiled.
"You look more like your dad every day,"
Alice said with a chuckle.
"That's okay, as long as I don't grow a mustache."
"I don't know, hon. You might look good with one," he teased. "I'd teach you how to trim it, and you'd be just as handsome as me."
Meg rolled her eyes as the door swung open from the dining room and Alice's kitchen help appeared.
"They're coming in,"
Troy announced. He was on the cusp of 15, and his voice was deeper than what his wiry, awkward frame suggested he should sound like. Jenny was right behind him, all business, hair pulled up into a tight little bun. She was a student at the University of Wyoming, a little younger than Meg, but from a nearby ranching family herself.
"Well, all right, let's eat."
Stan clapped a hand on Meg's shoulder and steered her into the dining room. She filled a plate from the buffet and took a seat on the bench at the middle table, across from the young married couple that had arrived yesterday, Tim and Laura. Tim's parents sat at another table talking to Jackson and Mark. Meg glanced around the room, but didn't see any strangers who might be a reporter. She was a little relieved, since she wanted to eat first. Maybe she could avoid dealing with the reporter until tomorrow. She had just taken another bite of chicken when Marjorie, the artist from St. Paul, appeared with a plate piled high with food. She sat on Laura's left, and they all greeted each other.
"I don't think I've ever been so hungry,"
Marjorie said. She had a nice matronly way about her, like Alice. Except Alice had a 40s actress thing going, while Marjorie was kind of plump and solid.
"It's the fresh, clean air,"
Tim said, laughing as he reached for the basket of rolls in the center of the table.
"Right, Meg?"
"That's what they say. So what did you do today?"
She set the chicken bone on her plate and picked up her fork to dig into her potato salad. Conversations, laughing, and the clink of silverware on plates filled the room. She glanced around again. 30 people. There'd be more coming in tomorrow. The ranch was finally full up, and she knew that always put her dad in a good mood.
"Took a great hike,"
Tim said.
"You're so fortunate to live in such a beautiful place."
"Oh, it is truly lovely,"
Marjorie added. All I did this afternoon was read and watch the horses in the paddock, and I don't think I've been so relaxed in months. Did you grow up here, Meg? She nodded and swallowed before responding. Born and raised.
Did you ever feel isolated?
Asked Laura as she reached for the small bowl of butter. Sometimes, but I went to school in Saratoga, so I had friends from school I'd hang out with, and I did a lot of 4-H stuff and horse events here and in Colorado. She smiled. Come to think of it, I was pretty busy as a kid.
When did you learn to ride a horse?
Laura looked at Meg with interest. She thought for a few moments. I started with my dad when I was probably 2 or 3, but he'd take me with him, too, even when I was still a baby. I've spent a lot of time on a horse.
Laura sighed wistfully. I envy you. I've always wanted to live on a ranch.
Keep saying that, and my dad'll put you to work.
Jim and Marjorie laughed.
Hey, Meg, your dad wants to know if you can help get some guests settled. A bunch just got in. He's at the office.
Troy gestured at the door as he replaced the basket of rolls with a full one.
Okay, excuse me, she said to the others. Be right back.
To Troy, she added, don't take my plate.
Don't worry, we'll watch it, said Marjorie.
Thanks. Meg gave her a smile and left. She crossed the parking lot to the office, where a group of people stood outside chatting. The door was open, and a few more people were inside talking to Stan. He looked up at her when she came in.
That's the Forster party outside. Could you get him settled? Rooms 9, 10, and 11?
Will do.
Oh, and while you're at it, could you please show Ms. Morelli here to room 5?
He made a gesture at a woman standing off to the side, behind a big guy with a really thick neck, and handed her a bunch of hotel-style keys, each on plastic keychains emblazoned with miniature horseshoes and the number of the room.
Sure.
She looked past the big guy and froze.
And wondered if she would have the presence of mind to pick her jaw up off the floor before anybody stepped on it.
Hi again,
Gina said, and the smile on her lips warmed her eyes even more. She was dressed in jeans that fit her much too well for mixed company, and a faded gray t-shirt that hung on her like a best friend.
Hey,
she responded, hoping she didn't sound as flustered as she felt.
How are you?
Did she actually say that? How lame could she be?
Good. Nice drive up here from Laramie.
Great. I didn't see your car.
So not cool. She sounded like a stalker, memorizing people's cars.
I parked on the other side of the office. Didn't want to put it where it might block anything.
She hesitated, wondering what to say that wouldn't sound stupid, but she drew a blank.
Okay.
She made a show of checking the keys.
All right, follow me. Or did you want to get your stuff first?
She tried for nonchalant now, like she always showed super attractive women who made her insides buck like an unbroken horse to their rooms.
I'll get it after dinner. I didn't miss dinner, did I?
Nope, there's plenty.
Oh, real smooth, she thought. She cleared her throat and motioned toward the door. Gina smiled again and followed her, and Meg tried not to think about her eyes or how inviting they looked, or the smile that tugged at the corners of her mouth, or how her voice made her think about late nights and candlelight.
Thanks, hon,
Stan called after her as she went outside.
Hi, she said to the Forster party, which was made up of what she guessed were 3 heterosexual couples and 3 children who ranged in age, she estimated, from 5 to 10. Welcome to the Diamond Rock Ranch. I'm Meg, and I'll take you to your rooms. Would you like to get your stuff now or later?
Later's fine,
said one of the men, who looked to be in his mid-30s and who seemed to have taken on group spokesman duties.
All right, let's go.
She kept her eyes off Gina to keep herself from getting distracted and led them across the parking area to the motel. Stan had put the Forsters on the ground floor, which was what he did when there were kids younger than 12. "Ground floor Forsters," she announced. "Who's lucky number 9? The man who had spoken up earlier stepped forward.
"That's us."
She handed him the 2 keys to the room. "Same key, 2 copies. But seriously, you won't need the keys out here. It's a lot easier to just leave your doors unlocked, especially if you've got people doing separate things and you're coming and going. Trust me, nobody's casing the joint." The women laughed, and the man said,
"Thanks."
"Room 10? She asked, still trying to avoid Gina's gaze. Another of the men took the 2 keys for that. "Call me crazy, but I'm thinking you're lucky number 11. She handed the keys to the 3rd man, who nodded and smiled. "Okay, you've already gotten one of our info packets, but here are some quick rules as a reminder, mostly common sense. You'll also find another copy of our lovely information packets in each room. First, although we appreciate parties as well as the next person, please refrain from such after 9 p.m. The horses need their beauty sleep." All 3 of the kids giggled. "Please don't smoke in the rooms. We prefer that they smell like pine smoke from the evening bonfire, which will be starting in 2 hours. She pointed at the spot past the dining hall that they used for the nightly socializing around the fire. "Don't worry, you'll see it. You won't get lost." She glanced at the youngest child, a little girl. "We might even be able to get you some marshmallows, if your folks think that's okay." The girl's eyes widened, and she looked up at a woman Meg assumed was her mom for an affirmative. "Now for the really important rule. Breakfast is 7 to 9, lunch is 12:30 to 2, and dinner is 5 to 7. You'll know when it's time to eat because we bang the heck out of that metal triangle hanging over there by the dining room. We do buffet style here, and we do keep coffee and other beverages and snacks available during the day. If you signed up for a special diet, when you come in for a meal, you'll find a stack of red name cards on the small table to your right as you enter the dining room." She gestured at the building that housed that and the kitchen. "Find your name and give it to one of our fabulous staff, and they'll go get your equally fabulous meal. Any questions so far?" The little girl she'd looked at earlier raised her hand. "Yes?" "Are you a cowgirl?" Laughter rippled through the group, and Gina's smile widened. "Do you think I am?"
"Yes."
"Why?" Meg asked, giving her an encouraging smile of her own.
"'Cause you have cowboy boots on."
"Hmm, that's a good observation. But do you have to be a cowgirl to wear boots?" The little girl thought about that for a minute.
"No."
"Then maybe I'm not a cowgirl."
"No, you are," she insisted.
Meg laughed.
"'Cause you live on a ranch," she added.
"Well, you're going to live here for a week. Maybe you're a cowgirl, too." She smiled and took her mom's hand. "Okay," Meg returned to her introduction. "Last thing for now. When you go into your rooms tonight, you'll see some bottled water. Drink it. You're at altitude now, and to keep yourselves from feeling funky and weird or developing nasty headaches, get hydrated and take it easy the first day or so. Oh, and if you need a phone, we keep one in the dining hall and one in the main office. Mobile phone service varies out here from spotty to non-existent, even with roaming. Ask one of us if you need to make a long-distance call and we'll set you up." She stopped and took a deep breath. "How is that?" The adults in the Forster party laughed and Gina smiled. Meg wrenched her gaze back to the Forsters. "If you need anything or if you have any questions, ask me or my dad, that's Stan, or any of the staff here.
And above all, have fun. That's a requirement.
Thanks so much,
said one of the men.
Can we still get some dinner?
You've got another hour. Head on over, and the bonfire starts about 8.
The Forster party decided to go to dinner before they unloaded their luggage, and they walked toward the lodge, leaving Meg with Gina.
Okay, Meg said. Lucky number 5. You're upstairs, which is my preference, actually, because you get some great views.
She was talking too fast. Calm down, she admonished herself.
Excellent. Let's go.
She waited for Meg to precede her up the stairs at the end of the building, and Meg led her to a room that was near the opposite end from the stairs.
Here we are, she said, tossing a goofy little game show flourish at the door.
She handed her the last key, relieved that their fingers didn't touch.
Thanks, Gina said.
Sure.
Gina stood watching her, expression unreadable.
So I'll see you in a few minutes, at the dining room.
She gestured toward the lodge.
Yes, thanks again.
Meg left before she could say any more stupid stuff.
Oh my God,
she muttered as she went down the stairs. Could she be any lamer? She returned to the dining room, where at least she'd have a bit of safety in numbers. Her plate was where she'd left it, and so were Marjorie and Jim and Laura. Good, because if Gina decided to sit with her one-on-one, she was sure she'd embarrass the hell out of herself.
Be right back,
she told the three as she picked her plate up and went to get another piece of chicken. By the time she sat down again, she felt composed enough to deal with Gina. At least she'd provide a nice respite from the reporter for a few days, who had yet to arrive, she thought, as she bit into her chicken. Or maybe she had, and her dad was dealing with her. She listened to Marjorie, who was talking about her art to Laura and Jim. She had just about finished her chicken when Gina approached.
Mind if I join you?
She smiled down at her, and she held a plate loaded with food.
Well, by all means,
Marjorie said before Meg could speak.
I'm Marjorie, and this is Laura.
She gestured at the young woman next to her.
And that handsome fellow is Tim, her husband. And this is...
Meg,
Gina interrupted with another smile.
I know, we've met. And she does a most excellent introduction to the ranch.
She took the empty seat on the bench to Meg's right.
I'm Gina, she said to the others.
Meg automatically reached for the basket of rolls and passed them to Gina, while Tim pushed the pitcher of iced tea toward her. She picked Gina's glass up.
Tea okay?
Gina nodded.
Great, thanks.
She filled Gina's glass, then Marjorie's. She was no longer calm, at least not internally. Her heart was kicking her ribs like a saddle bronc.
So, where are you from?
Laura asked. Tim and I are from Chicago, and Margie's in from St. Paul.
L.A.,
Gina said, just before she took a bite of chicken. Again, Meg tried not to stare, but something clicked. L.A.?
And what brings you here?
Marjorie pressed.
I'm a reporter.
Gina reached for a roll with one hand and held it while she buttered it with the other. Meg tried hard not to stare at her. Instead, she rolled that realization around her brain and stole glances at Gina's hands, which were great, too, competent and strong. Great eyes, great smile, great hands, and she was the reporter. Hell.
Oh, how exciting. Are you doing a story about the ranch?
Laura leaned forward, interested.
I am, and I'm going to interview everybody here, take all your quotes out of context, and write an exposé about Wyoming antelope trafficking.
She quirked an eyebrow and took a bite of her roll. Laura looked at her apparently not sure whether Gina was kidding or not. Meg stifled a laugh.
We'll be sure to show you where the aliens started mutilating cattle, too.
She took a sip of tea and watched out of the corner of her eye as Gina flashed her a look. The trace of another smile hovered on her mouth. Laura caught up with the joke and laughed.
Well, you should start your story with Meg. She grew up here.
Which means she probably knows all about these nefarious antelope trafficking networks.
Gina looked at Meg and a slow smile eased like a summer evening across her face.
They've paid for my silence. The aliens, on the other hand.
Meg shrugged and took another drink.
Marjorie giggled.
Where will the story be published?
Gina looked over at Laura. Los Angeles Times. If we're lucky, it'll also get a spread in one of the issues of the Sunday magazine. I'll be taking a lot of photos while I'm here. Hopefully, a few will make the cut.
That's wonderful, Marjorie said. I'm sure Stan appreciates the publicity.
She looked at Meg for confirmation.
Definitely.
You say that now, Gina said. But wait until you see what I write first. Although I could get you all kinds of paranormal researchers if you just show me the spots where the cattle were mutilated, or those other spots where a possible Bigfoot lurks.
I might, if you can get an episode of X-Files filmed here.
You drive a hard bargain, she said, humor sparking in her eyes. I'll see what I can do. I'm based in L.A., after all. Hollywood and all that.
Oh, I think the Diamond Rock would be a fabulous location for a Western,
Marjorie interjected.
Something like Silverado or Lonesome Dove.
I'll see what I can do.
Gina smiled and took a bite of green beans.
Meg shifted her attention to her own plate. Gina's lips were far too inviting. Conversation drifted back to Wyoming and the workings of the Diamond Rock Ranch. Meg answered good-naturedly, and she relaxed a little, since she didn't have to address Gina one-on-one with other people present. She punctuated her responses with a few funny anecdotes, which had Marjorie and Jim laughing. Laura's expression was a mixture of disbelief and amazement. Gina laughed as well, and offered a few teasing comments that triggered butterflies in Meg's stomach that she tried to ignore until a new round started up, usually whenever Gina glanced at her. She was just finishing a story about the time Dammit chased a skunk through the dining room when Stan appeared. He grinned.
Glad to see y'all having a good time. I need to borrow Meg for a bit.
Jim, Laura, and Marjorie all responded in kind as they got up to leave.
We're going to get ready for the bonfire, Jim said. See you there.
You bet.
Stan gave them a wave.
There'll be hot drinks in here if you want to bring one fireside.
He turned to Gina.
Did Meg get you settled?
She did, in style.
She glanced at Meg and more sparks rode the butterflies through her chest.
Well, we're darn pleased to have you. Welcome aboard, and thanks for coming on such short notice. Your editor told me what happened with the other reporter. Hope she's okay.
She is, Gina said. But she's envious that I'm here. She wanted to be the annoying reporter. I'm pleased to say that honor has fallen to me.
Oh, no problem. And trust me, no one's as annoying as Cherry Goodnight here.
He gestured with his head at Meg. Gina looked at her, puzzled but amused.
That's it, Dutchie.
She punched him playfully on his arm.
I'll have Dammit scare up another skunk just for you.
He grinned, a mischievous glint in his eyes.
So, did you tell Gina here about the time you decided it might be fun to go horseback riding in the Buff?
Her face flamed and she bit her lip.
I don't believe she did. Probably didn't want anyone to write something out of context,
Gina said innocently.
Christ, Dad, I was 3. Nothing sordid about that.
True.
He stroked his mustache.
Write a passage for all Wyoming children. They have to ride a horse naked. How far did you get?
Gina's eyes seemed to sparkle.
Meg clamped her mouth shut, but Stan answered. Clean down the county road. Thank God I found her before Mom did, else we both would have been in a world of hurt. And I've got plenty more like that for your article. Let me know when you want to have a sit-down. And let me or Meg know if there's anything you need. She may be annoying, but she is rather amusing.
He winked and moved away.
Meg, catch me at the office before the fire.
He shot over his shoulder as he left the dining room.
Okay.
Still embarrassed, she avoided Gina's eyes and instead picked their plates up off the table.
So,
Gina said as she picked up their glasses.
Naked?
I did have boots on.
She headed toward the kitchen with the dishes and put them in the bus tub that sat on a small table just outside the door.
I was just a kid.
Gina placed the glasses in the tub and followed Meg out of the dining room into the long evening shadows of the parking area.
I think it's a hell of a cute story.
A different kind of flush worked its way up Meg's neck.
Please don't write that one.
Gina smiled.
Your secret is safe with me, and your dad, and probably all the other people he tells that to.
Meg groaned.
Good point.
But have no fear, it's definitely safe with me. By the way, thanks for the help on Wednesday.
Oh, sure.
Meg relaxed, relieved that she changed the subject.
No problem. Did you get your tire fixed?
Yep. And your name is worth $5.
She frowned, confused.
Jim charged me $10 instead of $15.
Meg smiled.
That's great. Anyway,
she cleared her throat nervously.
If you need anything, let me know.
She groaned inwardly and wondered why the hell she couldn't carry on a decent conversation with her. She felt exposed in Gina's gaze, unsettled in the quiet intensity of her eyes, and she wished she knew what Gina was thinking. No, maybe she didn't. Because maybe she thinks I'm an idiot.
I will, and I'll see you at the fire.
She held Meg's gaze for a couple seconds longer, then turned and started walking across the 30 yards of hard-packed dirt that separated the lodge from the motel. Meg tried not to stare, but the way she looked and moved in those jeans was an open invitation. And Gina suddenly threw a glance over her shoulder at her. Busted. Totally. She quickly ducked her head and hurried over to the office. She'd need another shower, cold at this rate. Hell, she was looking at a week of cold showers. Shit, she muttered as she went inside. 4.
Gina seems like she'll write a good story.
Meg glanced at Marjorie, seated on the log next to her.
Oh? I've been around a lot of journalists, and you can tell which ones are the good ones. I think she's one of those. Let's hope.
She stared into the flames, which were slowly collapsing into coals. Gina sat across from her, talking to a couple of the other guests on the other side of the bonfire gathering place. For the past hour, she'd surreptitiously studied Gina's features and the way she made gestures with her hands and the way